Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York. The ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
This is the Michael K. Show.
Let's go to Eldrick in the Bronx. Eldrick.
It's Eldrick, by the way. You know, Kyrie was playing.
Oh, no. So, Peter, his name was Eldred, not Eldrick. Is that what he's saying?
Oh, is it LJ?
I mean, obviously, I was wrong. I put Eldrick up there. I asked him twice. I thought it was LJ the first time. So I said, did you say LJ? He said, no, whatever it was he said. And I said, oh, Eldrick? He said, yeah. So I went with that. I don't know.
You thought it was Tiger.
I have no idea what his name was. Even after rehearing him say it a third time just now, I'm even more confused.
So you dropped the ball on this is what you're saying?
I think he did.
The Michael K. Show.
It's LJ, Michael.
On 98.7 ESPN.
All right, let's get right to it. Now, there's a chance that Jeff Passan, who's going to join us this moment, might have to hang up in the middle if there is breaking news or somebody's texting him on his burner phone. He's got like three of them, I know, and he joins us now. Jeff, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Michael. How are you?
I'm doing well. I got to tell you, I read your entire story on ESPN, and the one thing I never tell you enough, you're a great reporter, but you know what? You're a hell of a writer.
Thank you.
It's
from somebody who spent a lot of time writing himself. That's a very high compliment, and I appreciate that very much.
You're really, really good. Anyway, but you knew that. So where are we right now? Is there a chance that we could have the White Knight riding in, or are we looking at cancellations?
Yeah, I mean, listen, there's always a chance. Any deal is one conversation away, right? If one side decides that the fallout from this is going to be too grave to hold firm in its position, then the other side's going to jump on that opportunity. I just don't see that happening right now. I think that both of them understand what a deal that each would accept looks like, and neither of them is willing to get to that point and give up what each thinks is important. And whether it is a 14-team playoff that's becoming a big issue, whether it's the CBT. I feel like the minimum salary, Michael, is something that's going to be resolved. I feel like the bonus pool for pre-arbitration players is going to be resolved. But it's the playoff expansion and the CBT that look like they're becoming the most important parts of this deal. And the league wants 14 teams for a couple of reasons. Number one, because ESPN is going to pay a nice chunk of money to go and broadcast those games. And number two, because I think there's a feeling, and it's what makes the union so reticent to accept it, that it allows an opportunity for teams like the New York Yankees, Boston Red Sox, Chicago Cubs, Los Angeles Dodgers, San Francisco Giants, those high payroll teams to say, well, if there are 14 teams in the playoffs and division winners are not hugely advantaged during this wild card round, then why do these teams at the top end have any incentive to go out and spend money, right? Like, right. If you can get in and have to win, the teams that are under the playoff format that's been proposed, the teams that are not the number one seed are going to have to play a three-game wild card series, and the division winners get to play all three games at home, which is an advantage, but is it a big enough advantage to make up for not winning your league and getting that first round bye? I don't think the union feels so at this point. In the CBT, it's just an obvious one. It has not gone up anywhere near commensurate with revenues. Five teams last year were within $3.5 million of the threshold, showing that it acts like a soft cap, and players want to get paid more money. Like, that's a very simple way to look at this. This is a situation where the league believes that it pays players enough right now, and players believe that they are not getting a large enough percentage of revenues.
All right, so since this acts more as a cap than a guardrail, I mean, we see that, as you said, so many teams within 3.5 and they didn't go over. Would there be any thought amongst the players to accept a straight-out salary cap so then at least you'd have a floor? Or is that a non-starter? Because, I mean, the cap has always been a nasty word, but every other league has it.
Yep.
Would they accept it? Because then it would bring up the Pirates and the Tampa Bay Rays to maybe $100 million.
Well, this was, Michael, proposed, remember, by Major League Baseball. I think it was back in August or so. The idea of a $100 million floor, a $180 million cap, both of them being soft and there being penalties involved, where if you go over the 180, then that helps fund the teams to get up to 100 on the bottom end. The
right.
union rejected this outright because of two things. Number one, if you look historically, even if a league starts at a particular percentage of revenues going to players, that number is always negotiated down, and that's what the unions are always fighting for. But number two, if you look at the reason behind a cap, the idea that it promotes competitive balance, well, I hate to say it, but the league most known for a cap is the NFL. And over the last 19 years, Michael, in Major League Baseball, an uncapped sport, 13 franchises have won the World Series and 19 have made it. In the NFL, a capped sport, 13 teams have won the Super Bowl and 19 have made it. And that right there, to me at least, says that having a cap does not necessarily promote the sort of competitive balance in reality that it would in theory.
No, I would agree, but I mean, it would. Don't you think that there'd be more money that would be forced into the sport if the low spending teams like the Orioles have to spend $100 million?
I think the problem is the incentives would have to be there in order for them to go out and spend it, as opposed to, let's say, if they decide our window is not right now, then what we're going to do to get up to that $100 million is go to the Red Sox or the Yankees or the Dodgers, find a player making $20 or $25 million who they want to get rid of and trade for him to try and get a couple prospects as well.
Gotcha.
To enrich and enhance their farm system. And that, to me, it's the opposite of how it should work. But that, I think, in reality is how it would. And we've seen that in a couple of different places from teams that don't necessarily have to spend money. They just find the value proposition to be awfully good.
Do you believe at all when we get callers from people, Jeff, who say, if they can't get it together, I'm not watching this game when it comes back? Do you take anything from that? What are your thoughts?
I don't want to be dismissive toward the desires and wants of fans, because I think that's rude and unnecessary. That being said, I think emotionally in the moment, of course, that's an understandable thought. But that, just like when you say, I am not rooting for this garbage team that's going 60 and 162. Well, if 2 years later that team is going 102 and 60 and you're not watching, then you're kind of a fool.
Right. I'm wondering, Jeff, when you look at the landscape, it's hard to get a consensus among the 30 teams, because I think there are several teams that want completely different things than other teams do. And I look at this, Jeff, and I'm thinking the smaller market, low-spending teams are holding the sport hostage, because I was told on Thursday by somebody that a lot of this is driven by everybody's fear of Steve Cohen spending $400 million out of payroll. Do you buy any of that, that the smaller market teams are saying, no, we can't have a team that spends $250 million more than us?
I think there's some sentiment there, and I understand why some smaller market teams would say that. And to them, I say, then go and be the Rays.
Right.
If baseball were a sport, Michael, that showed no path to relevance based on payroll, then I would have a much better time understanding the disillusionment of smaller market teams when it comes to payroll disparity.
But wouldn't you say that Tampa Bay, it's awfully tough what they do? I mean, it's brilliant what they do. Not everybody could do that.
Yeah, it's tough what they do. It's tough what the Milwaukee Brewers do. It's tough what the Oakland A's have done. If the Rays were simply outliers here, it's tough what the Cleveland Guardians do and in being competitive most seasons. I think the toughest part with the Rays is not necessarily the difficulty in operationally doing so, because their secret sauce is pretty dang good. I think the difficult part there is having a fan base that understands why they have to do those things, that that makes it that hard. And you see, Andrew Friedman took the Rays way out to Los Angeles, and you see what happens when you do it with a payroll. They don't lose their division. They won a World Series in 2020. It's an extremely effective way of doing things. It's just difficult to replicate by other teams. But is it something that the fundamental way the sport has been operated and it has worked for as long as it has needs to necessarily be changed for? I don't think so. And this is someone, by the way, who grew up in Cleveland,
right,
who lives in Kansas City, who understands the issues that befall small markets. It is tougher. Don't get me wrong. But I also think it's tough in a way to be the New York Yankees. And listen, nobody's going to be crying for the Yankees by any means. But I think the difficult part for the Yankees is that when the money's there, the expectations are outsized as well. Nobody in Kansas City is sitting here every year after a playoff appearance and saying these guys are bums. If the Yankees don't win the World Series, it's a disappointing year. And I think that difference is tangible. It's not going to make me feel bad for the Yankees, but I at least think there is a downside to being a large market, large dollar team where the expectations are that much higher.
Talking with Jeff Passan, our very own from ESPN here on the Michael Kay Show. Have the owners done the work that if they miss all of April game-wise and don't pay the salaries in April, that they will end up making money? Have they done that work where they feel that April is really fungible?
I haven't, I don't know for sure if that is the case. I do know that April, in terms of attendance, is the lowest month in the sport, and that with regional sports networks, the expectation is that there's a particular number of games that teams need to play in order to get paid their full RSN fee. Mm-hmm. So I think if there is any month that Major League Baseball teams would be willing to give up, it would be April. But we also have to weigh that, Michael, against the downside of what happens when you lose the beginning of a season, when opening day gets pushed back, the negativity, the disillusionment among fans. Like, all of those things are very tangible, very real, and very difficult to put dollar signs on, right? So logically, it makes sense that if Major League Baseball is going to stand on a very specific line, then that line is going to, it's going to include an April being missed. But are we at that point yet? No, because I don't think, even though Major League Baseball looks like without a deal, it's going to announce games being missed. I'm just not buying that quite yet. If progress is made over the next, over today and over the next 7 hours before we hit the end of this deadline, you're telling me that MLB on principle alone is going to say, you know what, even though we're 31 days away from opening day, we're just going to cancel this thing right now? No, of course not. It'd be a foolish thing to do. So to me, as much as MLB said the deadline is February 28th, I look at the middle of next week, probably more like a week from now, as being more like the real deadline. It's not like MLB hasn't gone through a season before where it had a 3-week spring training. It happened 2 years ago. And the argument that injuries went up, that's a problem. That's not great. It's not ideal. But nothing about this is ideal right now. And doing something on principle when the alternative is better in both the short and long term seems like the sort of thing that the league and the players would do.
Do you think that each side knows what side is going to eventually blink? Because there's going to be baseball this year, Jeff. Somebody's going to have to give in. Which side is more likely to give in? And if that side knows it's going to eventually give in, why not give in now and make nice?
Because I'm not sure that Major League Baseball is used to giving in or playing nice. And I think if there's going to be gives, it's going to be from the league side. Because I think the league is starting to realize that players are extraordinarily angry, and that anger is going to lead them to places potentially that could be harmful to themselves, yes, but could be even more harmful to the league long term. And so I think the players are going to get the minimum salary bumped up to a much higher number. I think the players are going to get the bonus pool for pre-arbitration players bumped up to a higher level. And when it comes down to it, it's going to be an argument over 14-team playoffs and the competitive balance tax. That's where I think this thing's going.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
We all know breakfast is an important part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any. You know what happens? You grab a cup of coffee and skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, and waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Derek Jeter resigning today. Does this have anything to do with this? You know, I was thinking out loud, not having anybody tell me this, Jeff, that you know, Derek Jeter was an adored player by players, too. Does he want to be attached to this stink if this thing really goes south?
I don't know how much it has to do with that. I mean, look, when you're with the Miami Marlins, whether it was during the Jeffrey Loria era or during the Bruce Sherman era right now, there's always a question about how much the organization's going to spend. I will say this about the Marlins. Under Derek Jeter, they put together an awfully good farm system, and I'm not saying that they're going to be up there competing with Steve Cohen's Mets going forward, but I will say this. If the Mets have as good a rotation in the next 5 years as the Miami Marlins do, they are going to be really, really good because the Marlins' young pitching, Michael, not just Sandy Alcantara. I mean, they've got guys coming, whether it's Sixto Sanchez, Edward Cabrera, Max Meyer, or Yuri Perez, who's an 18-year-old, carved at A-ball last year and has a chance, I think, to be the best pitching prospect in baseball by the end of this season. The Marlins have a chance to be really good. So clearly something happened in the direction of the franchise that told Derek Jeter he doesn't want to be there. And that something is not insignificant considering the good things that the Marlins have coming in their future.
Go ahead, Pete.
Well, no. So I'm just trying to understand. So what do you think is exactly Derek's logic here?
Oh, I don't know. I need more information, Peter, to figure that out. I would just like trying to piece it together. Something happened. I don't know what that something was, but something had to have happened. Did it have to do with what the Marlins payroll was? Did it have to do with what Jeter's future was in terms of his job with his contract coming up? I mean, there are any number of things, but I think it would be irresponsible of me to point to one and say this was the reason.
I was wondering, I remember when he first got into this, Jeff, that, I mean, hope my memory serves me correctly here, that if he was there 5 years for his $5 million investment, it would become $25 million. But he had to be there 5 years. So this is 4.5 years. It must have been something awful, or they agreed to just give him the $25 million for his original $5 million investment. Do you remember that, too, when he took over?
I don't recall that. Though, I mean, his shares in the organization, he's divesting those. So
right.
He's not even going to own 4% of the Marlins anymore after this.
Do you believe that the owners or the players take into account that any kind of labor strife with what the world is going through right now is an awfully bad look? Or is that, hey, listen, this is business and we can't think about that?
I think there's always the ability to look outside of the bubble that you've ensconced yourself in mm-hmm. and acknowledge what's going on there. I also think that when it comes to business, that is weakness. And it's a callous thing to say, right? Like, mm-hmm. how can we not look at what's going on in the world? But, Michael, the reality is there are terrible things happening in the world all the time. And I am really hopeful that's what's happening in Ukraine right now does not devolve into something worse than it already is, which is absolutely horrendous, and that it doesn't have a more demonstrable effect on the world than it is already. But I don't think either side right now is looking at that and taking it into account, because I think the other side will jump on that and try and leverage it as best it can. And in negotiations like this, where leverage is really the name of the game, you don't want to give up anything.
All right, one final thing, because I know you're busy. So you think that if this is going to get settled, the owners are going to have to give the players more?
No question about it.
All right, so let's say the owners, because Keith Olbermann, who went to the same college as Manfred, has been saying on Twitter he thinks the whole season's going to be banged. So let's say the owners are intractable and they ain't moving, Jeff. The players would be willing to give up a year of their career for this?
I think if the players feel like what they get out of it is not just good for them, but positions the union well for the next generation of players who are coming forward, then yes. I firmly believe at this point that there are a lot of players in leadership positions who are willing to miss a year.
That's amazing. Just amazing.
And you know what? As a baseball fan, Michael, I hate that. But as somebody who also understands the perspective of the players, not just having talked with them, but having seen what's happened to them. I don't, you know, for those who haven't read the story I have up on ESPN.com right now, the players are as strident as they are because they feel like the actions of the league have put them there. And there's a very compelling case, which is essentially the hallmark of the column that I wrote. There's a very compelling case that they're not wrong, that this isn't just players sitting here being aggrieved, trying to say, give me my money, give me my money. No, it's much more than that. I think it's what they feel like is fundamental disrespect from owners, from the league, from Rob Manfred, and that by standing up for what they're standing up for now, that they are morally in the right. Their entire premise is a morally based one, which is a tough thing to do when you're looking at a financial instrument, right? Like, they're trying to get money here, but they're trying to do so from a place of morality. And it's a pretty compelling case when you see what the league has done to players, whether it's their salaries going down, whether it's service time manipulation, whether it's the proliferation of tanking. All of these different things have actual effects on not just players, but fans. And it's why I think the tide has turned a little bit in terms of the fans. You're always going to have people who say, Michael, this bum makes $4 million on average a year and he wants to complain. Before you ask that question, say, am I asking the right question? Or should the question be, these players who are the game, and they are fundamentally the game, Michael Kay, let's not twist this. Right. The game without the players who are in it right now would be a whole lot worse. Are these players who are the game saying, not that it's bad that I make $4 million on average a year, but what's bad is that the people who own teams are making a disproportionately larger amount of the revenue that we help generate, and that all we want is a fair percentage coming our way, a reasonable percentage, a percentage that's not going down as revenues are going up, but that's in line with where it's been in the past.
Do you agree with what Andy McCullough wrote in The Athletic today, that the owners don't care what the public thinks? I think his line was, I know his line was, billionaires don't check their mentions. Do you think that that's part of the issue as well?
I think that owners care when the bottom line is affected, mm-hmm. right? Now, listen, I'm not a businessman, so I've never run a business before. But I do talk with a lot of businessmen, and businessmen start caring when their bank account starts draining. It's the reason why you see the response that you do in crisis management. When there's a crisis, it's only a crisis if the advertisers start going away. And I think in this case, if you have advertisers pulling away from baseball teams, from the sport itself, that's going to be a very, very big sign that baseball is in a bad place. And the last thing that these franchises want, the last thing that these owners want, is for these franchise values that have gone up, Michael, from over the last 10 years, from $15 billion total to $55 billion total, to sit there and say, my investment is losing money. That's when they will cave.
Jeff, great stuff. Extraordinary story today on ESPN.com. I know you're hugely busy, but we thank you for coming on and giving us the time that you have.
Pleasure is always mine, Michael. Thanks.
Thanks, Jeff.
That's Jeff Passan. So some interesting things there. So he said that the players are so united and so unified that they would give up a whole year. And then you hear from other people like a Keith Olbermann that the owners are not going to budge, that they would give up a whole year. That's frightening. Now, that hurts. That hurts the sport. Where if you can go a year without it, all of a sudden, you know, there is life and there are summer activities. Other than doing this, that's a scary proposition. I don't think a whole year happens.
Is there any world in which if that happens, it makes the heart grow really fond for it and people really want it back?
For those that truly love it, but there are a lot of peripheral fans, so those were the ones that you would lose.
Right.
But I mean, I don't even want to throw that out into the metaverse because I don't think that's going to happen. There are some that do, but I don't think that's going to happen. I think cooler heads will prevail. 1-800-919-3776. Let's talk about it. They're still talking down in Jupiter, Florida, which is a good thing. It's Kay Rosenberg and you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael Kay Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.